So for our fourth week, yes, it's only been 4 weeks, of sci-fi, I've chosen what I'm calling the Tao of Star Trek. And I chose that title because Taoism recognizes both the light and the dark, right? But of course, this is going to be about much more than just the Tao of Star Trek. What we're really going to be looking at this morning is Star Trek's focus on exploring the shadow, what I was talking about with the kids earlier, Jung's concept of the shadow. And in fact, I found an article from 2014. Apparently, I'm not the only one who's noticed Star Trek's preoccupation with our dark side. And this was from the New York Review of Science Fiction. Yes, there is such a publication. And this article was called The Elicitation of Jung's Shadow in Star Trek by Victor Grech. He says, the physical manifestation of the shadow is extremely common in Star Trek as it allows the psychological exploration of the human condition through, quote, an explicit dialogue or interplay between the parts of the personality that coexist uneasily within each of us. The science fiction genre and Star Trek itself are highly suited to such explorations, quote, given the special premises of its science fiction world, to say nothing of cinematic special effects, the doppelganger can be so easily made incarnate. In other words, obviously a very intelligent and learned person, let me boil that down. Star Trek loves exploring our shadow. And one of the reasons that Star Trek loves exploring our shadow is because through special effects, through cinematic devices, Star Trek can make our shadow real, right in front of us, instead of hidden away in the recesses where it usually is. And the two episodes I'm going to talk about today literally do that. The first one is a classic Trek episode, and it's called The Enemy Within. It was actually in the very first season. And so right from the get-go, in episode 5 of this incredible, groundbreaking, history-making series, they're exploring the shadow, that darkness within us. So what happens in this episode is that, and this one you can actually find on Netflix if you want to watch it afterwards, that what happens is that a transporter malfunction splits Captain Kirk into two Kirks, what they call the good captain and the bad or the evil captain. Now, it takes the crew a little while to catch on that this has happened, right? Even though the evil captain is acting pretty evil, I think it speaks volumes that it took them a while to figure out that something was wrong. But actually, it was Spock and Dr. McCoy who started really picking up on what's going on here. Like in one scene, Kirk would be very, very gentle, very kind, and then in the next scene, he would be attacking Yeoman Rand, right? And so they finally figured out that this had happened through this transporter malfunction, and what they started to observe was that it was the evil side of Captain Kirk who had the decision-making ability, right? Who had the command capacity. Now, the nice side, the compassionate, loving, tender side was lovely, but as the episode went on, what we noticed was that Captain Kirk was very slowly losing his capacity to make a decision. And Spock observed to him, you need your dark side to make these decisions. It's in fact the qualities of your evil side, what they were calling the evil Kirk, that made you the captain that you are. It's very difficult for Kirk to acknowledge this. So I wanted to read you a couple of excerpts from The Ethics of Star Trek. Yes, I have a whole shelf in my library dedicated to Star Trek books. And here's what Judith Barrett says. The Enterprise crew consider the manic half of Kirk as, quote, an evil imposter, while regarding the rational half of the captain as his normal, beloved self. If that's the case, perhaps they should have just wasted Bad Kirk with their phasers and let his good half survive. That would certainly seem logical, right? Yes, except that rational Kirk finds that both his strength of will and his determination reside in his more emotional half. Without these faculties, he cannot make the choices necessary for ethical action to happen. Indeed, the rational Kirk, that would be the good Kirk, realizes that emotion is a necessary part of a psychologically healthy human being. I have to take him back inside myself, he says to McCoy. I can't survive without him. I don't want to take him back. He's like an animal, a thoughtless, brutal animal, and yet it's me. Reason and emotion may be entirely separate functions, yet they're critically interdependent. To sever one from the other leads to psychological death, that is, insanity. Again, this accounts for why the rational Kirk routinely has to rely on both Spock and McCoy in times of decision. It also explains why he says that he can't survive without his emotional part. Neither half of Kirk is complete without the other. In contrast, there is no such debate going on inside the irrational Kirk, what they're calling the evil Kirk. Extremely paranoid of losing his power as a starship captain, indeed to the point where reasoning is not possible, he sees no alternative but to kill his double. But you can't kill me, the rational Kirk tries to explain to his manic half. You can't. Don't you understand? I'm part of you. You need me, and I need you. The problem is the irrational Kirk can't understand. He's so far gone. He's incapable of listening to reason. So he fires his phaser at his rational counterpart and fortunately misses and hits the control panel instead. And so continuing, though rational Kirk know he needs to bring his other half back inside of himself in order to survive, the experience of seeing his most animalistic excesses literally brought to life still leaves him a little shaken. In fact, he says at one point, no one should have to see what I've seen. Bones reassures the captain that he's no different from anyone else. We all have our darker side. We need it. It's half of what we are. It's not really ugly, it's human. As much as he hates to admit it, McCoy knows Spock is right. Without the negative side, he continues, you couldn't be the captain and you know it. Your strength of command lies mostly in him. Isn't that a pleasant thought? In his own way, the doctor is reiterating the fundamental Aristotelian point that we need both our emotion and our reason to function in order to respond correctly to the various situations we encounter in life. Having heard plenty about his deficiencies at this point, the rational side of Kirk despondently asks, what does he have going for him? You have the goodness, the intelligence, and the logic, says McCoy. Perhaps that's where man's essential courage comes from. For you see, your irrational half was afraid, but you weren't. And he's referring to a scene in which the evil Kirk had started to literally die, not recognizing that he needed both sides. And it was the good Kirk who took his hand and infused him with his courage and brought him back. Was the goodness that provided the courage. So, what can we learn from this episode? Oh my goodness, we don't have nearly enough time, so I will summarize. First, as Spock observes in the captain, it is sometimes what we would call our evil side, properly balanced with goodness, that allows us to make decisions, that allows us to get clear, that forms the foundation for our personal power, as difficult as that is to accept. And second, I think we also see in this episode the importance of embracing all of us. As I was sharing with the girls earlier, you know, we like to think, oh, that's not really me. I want to deny that part of me. I want to deny the part of me that gets angry and impatient and judgmental and scared. And yet that's all part of who we are. And when we deny any aspect of ourselves, we are denying how that aspect can support us. In Pema Chodron's little book, Awakening Loving Kindness, I want to share something she says about this because I think it's one of the most beautiful explanations of how important it is to love all of us. She says, when people start to meditate or to work with any kind of spiritual discipline, they often think that somehow they're going to improve, which is, look at the bookstores. How big is the self-improvement section of a bookstore? Which is a sort of subtle aggression against who they really are. It's a bit like saying, if I jog, I'll be a much better person. If I could only get a nicer house, I'd be a better person. If I could meditate and calm down, I'd be a better person. Or the scenario may be that they find fault with others. They might say, if it weren't for my husband, I'd have a perfect marriage. You can put wife in there, feel free. If it weren't for the fact that my boss and I can't get on, my job would be just great. And if it weren't for my mind, my meditation would be excellent. But loving kindness, maitri, toward ourselves doesn't mean getting rid of anything. Maitri means that we can still be crazy after all these years. We can still be angry after all these years. We can still be timid or jealous or full of feelings of unworthiness. The point is not to try to change ourselves. Meditation practice, I would say any spiritual practice, isn't about trying to throw ourselves away and become something better. It's about befriending who we are already. The ground of practice is you or me, wherever we are right now, just as we are. That's the ground. That's what we come to study, and that's what we come to know with curiosity and interest. So this internal struggle to keep all of our parts in balance, it covers every tradition around the planet. Every major spiritual tradition addresses what we would call the shadow. St. Paul, remember when he would lament that I do what I know I should do and I don't do what I do what I shouldn't do, right? That age-old, why do I keep doing things that I know I shouldn't do, right? In Islam, you know, we hear about the jihad a lot in Islam, but you know what the true jihad is? The greater jihad is the internal struggle. It's the internal acknowledgement of all of our parts, those that we love and those that we don't. Jesus spent 40 days in the wilderness, remember that story? Struggling with his demons, with his darkness, with his temptation. Think about that. Without that 40 days in the wilderness, he would have had no ministry. He had to embrace and integrate his darkness, his temptations, in order to claim his power. Siddhartha Gautama, who would become the Buddha, same thing. He grew up in the lap of luxury. He was a prince, and his father did everything he could to keep him inside the palace walls. He didn't want him exposed to any darkness. No one who was ill or aging was allowed in the palace grounds. He wanted to keep all darkness away from his son, the prince. And finally, Siddhartha rebelled, and he snuck out of the palace grounds, and he saw people who were aging and ill, and he saw death for the first time in his life. And that exposure to the darkness is what propelled him on his journey to eventually become the Buddha. All of the masters recognized that we do not bring the light by ignoring the darkness, but by embracing the gifts of it. And then, of course, Taoism is that balance between yin and yang. You know, the symbol for Taoism, the black and the white interspersed. It's a recognition that we are all of that and that we need all of that. And of course, in modern literature, Star Wars, Harry Potter, totally about the shadow. Don't tell the kids. Right? Totally about embracing the darkness. Harry's entire journey all the way through the series is about recognizing that he had parts of Voldemort. Spoilers. Sorry. And then every superhero. I mean, let's talk about Batman, okay? Come on. They're all about, the superheroes have all embraced their dark side. We don't even have to talk about Darth Vader. They've all explored that importance of recognizing and integrating all of our parts. So one of the interesting things about this episode was that the good Kirk was apparently unaware of his talents or his abilities. That's what was showing up as his lack of confidence. Like he had forgotten that he was a good captain, right? He had forgotten that he had these abilities. In the ethos of Star Trek, they quote Aristotle saying that they call this energy being shame-faced, meaning unaware of your innate talents and abilities, as opposed to the evil Kirk, the evil captain, who had no shame at all and was unable to comprehend the consequences of his behavior. We would probably call him a sociopath at this point, right, in our understanding. And that reminded me of my favorite definition of humility. I can't remember if I shared this with you guys, but it's humility is not thinking less of yourself. It is thinking of yourself less. So Kirk, as captain of the fleet's premier starship, had to be aware of his abilities. And we see when he started to lose that awareness, he started to lose his command capacity. Right? He had to know that he was really good at what he did. He needed the confidence that comes from true humility, which is knowing that you're really good at something and that you are committed to doing that thing in service. He needed that, and he could only find that by embracing his darkness. Without his dark side, he'd become forgetful. He wasn't able to make decisions. He needed the dark side. As repulsed as he was by it, he needed it. And he was the one of the two that recognized that. So the second episode is actually a Deep Space Nine episode. It's a little more complicated, so I'm not going to go into it in great detail. But I have a clip I want to show you because it's a beautiful visual of what it can look like to embrace the aspects of ourselves that we don't want. So just a real quick background. In the Deep Space Nine universe, there's a species called the Trill. And the Trill is a joined species, meaning that there's a humanoid host, and then there's what they call these symbiotes, which really are just like big, giant, icky-looking worms, but we won't go there. So these hosts house these symbiotes, and it's a truly symbiotic relationship. They share a body, they share thoughts, they share memories, right? They share the whole experience. The symbiotes live for hundreds and hundreds of years. So as a host ages, they will pass to a new host, okay? And that's important to understand for the story because when they go into each new host, the memories of all the past hosts come with them. And so these hosts have to go through extreme testing to make sure that they have the emotional and the mental and the physical stamina to handle this symbiote coming into them. So in the episode Equilibrium, the beautiful Jadzia Dax, Dax is the name of the symbiote, Jadzia is the name of the host, starts suffering memory losses and hallucinations, and then all of a sudden she's remembering a song that she has no idea why she that she can play, and starts having a mental collapse. And so the captain and the doctor rush her back to Trill Central, I forget what it's called, and they take her to what's called the Symbiosis Commission so that they can help her. Because what they realize is she's starting to reject her symbiote, which is bad news. Because once you've been joined, if they take away your symbiote, the host will die. The host's body has become dependent on the symbiote and needs this in order to survive. So what they discern by the end of the episode is that at one point in this symbiote's lifespan of hundreds of years, it had been put into an unstable host. Somehow the testing had broken down, and this host had murdered someone. So, of course, they took the symbiote out of him. He had already died in the battle. And because they didn't want this mistake to become public knowledge, they tried to block the memory of this symbiote before they put it into its next host. And what was happening to Jadzia was this block that had been put in place 75 years earlier had broken down. And all of these memories, these dark memories, and these dark impulses had started to come through. And her psyche couldn't handle it. And that's why she was, at this point, in a coma. And so what was interesting, a couple of things about the episode, was that the Symbiosis Commission was willing to let her die rather than expose the secret. What's that old saying? We're only as sick as our secrets. They were so frightened of this information becoming public that they were willing to let her die. But Captain Sisko would have none of it. And he insisted that Jadzia be given the opportunity to allow these memories to come back, as painful as they were, and to allow her the opportunity to integrate these memories so that she and the symbiote could cohabitate and continue out their lifespan together. And so I want to invite Dan to come up. There's just a quick minute and a half scene that shows this beautiful experience of her integrating. So where she is now is she's back at Symbiosis Central in the pond where the symbiotes live, and what you're going to see is her embracing these dark memories. So that's the visual I wanted you to see of how powerful and sweet and gentle it can be to become willing to embrace those aspects of ourselves that we would rather not. What'd you think? So also in this episode, when she's having her hallucinations, the Duran character that you saw her embracing at the end is showing up in the hallucinations with a mask on. And this happens in several scenes. And it's when she rips the mask off during one of the hallucinations that she enters into the coma, right? Because all of a sudden the memories have started to flood back. And that scene always reminds me of a story that Debbie Ford shares in The Dark Side of the Light Chasers. It's one of New Thought's quintessential books on the shadow. And here's the story that Debbie shares. She says, and this is from the chapter, Know Thy Shadow, Know Thyself. Within each of us lies a solid gold treasure. This golden essence is our spirit, pure and magnificent, open and glowing. but this gold has been covered up by a hard shell of clay. The clay comes from our fear. It is our social mask, the face we show the world. Unconcealing your shadow reveals your mask. We must look at this mask with love and compassion, for there is great value in understanding what we hide behind. Consider the story of the Golden Buddha. In 1957, a monastery in Thailand was being relocated, and a group of monks was put in charge of moving a giant clay Buddha. In the midst of the move, one of the monks noticed a crack in the statue. Concerned about damaging the idol, the monks decided to wait for a day before continuing with their task. When night came, one of the monks came to check on the giant statue. He shined his flashlight over the entire Buddha. When he reached the crack, he saw something reflected back at him. The monk, his curiosity aroused, got a hammer and a chisel and began chipping away at the clay Buddha. As he knocked off piece after piece of clay, the Buddha got brighter and brighter. After hours of work, the monk looked up in amazement to see standing before him a huge, solid gold Buddha. True story. Many historians believe the Buddha had been covered with clay by Thai monks several hundred years earlier before an attack by the Burmese army. They covered the Buddha to keep it from being stolen. In the attack, all the monks were killed. So it wasn't until 1957, when the monks were moving the giant statue, that the great treasure was discovered. Like the Buddha, our outer shell protects us from the world. Our real treasure is hidden within. We human beings unconsciously hide our inner gold under a layer of clay. All we need to do to uncover our gold is to have the courage to chip away at our outer shell, piece by piece. So interestingly, in both episodes, at the end, both characters had to literally embrace their dark side. In order for Kirk to reintegrate, he had to embrace evil Kirk on the transporter pad so they could put him back together. And as we just saw, Jadzia embraced the energy of Duran Balar in order to reintegrate all of her parts. And without that, they both would have died. In the Gospel of St. Thomas, Jesus says, if you bring forth what is within you, what you bring forth will save you. If you do not bring forth what is within you, what you do not bring forth will destroy you. Now, you know, a lot of times we interpret that, or we have interpreted it to mean that we need to bring forth our gifts and abilities, right? That we need to bring forth those talents that we were put here to share. And that when we don't bring those forth, it can be very frustrating and it can destroy us. But I think the flip side is also true. I think that Jesus was also encouraging us to look at those aspects of ourselves that we would rather not, what we call the shadow. Because if we are not willing to bring those forth, what we deny can destroy us. Debbie says, and she's quoting Gandhi here, Gandhi said, "The only devils in the world are those running around in our hearts. That is where the battle should be fought." And Debbie explained, shadow work is about opening your heart and making peace with your internal devils. It's about embracing your fears and weaknesses and finding compassion for your humanity. Give yourself the gift of your heart. As soon as you open your heart, you will be able to open your heart to others. We all have this tendency to see things as black and white. But there is good and bad and dark and light in everything. To deny it anywhere is to deny it everywhere. There is nothing we can see that is not God. And when we can see that in ourselves, then we are able to see it in everyone. So this work and these episodes ask us if we're willing to embrace our darkness and our craziness, if we're willing to befriend who we already are. Jesus taught us to love our neighbor as ourselves. So how are you loving yourself? Because here's the thing. If you're only loving the parts of you that you have deemed to be acceptable or worthy of love, then that's only as far as you can love your neighbor. But when we become willing to love all the parts of us, the good, the bad, and the ugly, then we can become exquisitely loving and accepting of everyone in our lives. And it takes courage. The courage that Jadzia needed to integrate those awful memories. The courage that Kirk had when he took back the ugliness that he saw right in front of him. That takes courage. So I want to leave you. I just saw Wonder Woman last week. Oh my gosh. Go see Wonder Woman. Awesome. And this is how she ended the movie. Super powerful. And I'm not going to tell you what happened. Spoilers. I'm just saying, go see the movie. And this is how it ends. All right? This is Diana Prince sitting at her desk. She says, I used to want to save the world, to end war and bring peace to mankind. But then I glimpsed the darkness that lives within their light. I learned that inside every one of them, there will always be both. The choice each must make for themselves, and something no hero will ever defeat. I've touched the darkness that lives in between the light. I've seen the worst of this world and the best. I've seen the terrible things men do to each other in the name of hatred and the lengths they'll go to for love. Now I know only love can save this world. So I stay, I fight, and I give for the world I know can be. This is my mission now and forever. Pretty amazing mission, isn't it? To stay and fight and give for the world that we know can be. So let's take that intention into meditation.
You are a part of me. And so we take a deep breath together. And another. And as we continue to breathe with intention, I invite you to acknowledge the courage that it takes to be willing to acknowledge, to embrace, and to integrate those aspects of ourselves that we would rather not. For as we explored last week, this is truly the work of heroes. And it is the work that our world calls for. Our world yearns for enlightenment, for awakening, for a recognition that we are so much more than we appear to be. What the masters have taught us is that to become enlightened is not to ignore our darkness, but to embrace it. And so I invite you on your next breath to breathe consciously into your heart space. Just focus your breath on your heart. And in your mind's eye, see that area glowing. See it warm. See it soften and expand. And as you continue to breathe into your heart space, allow the breath to nurture the wisdom, the love, the compassion, and the courage that live there. Staying centered in that space, I invite you in your mind's eye to look into a mirror and to see you. Continuing to breathe into your heart space, look into that mirror. And look into your eyes. And become willing to love all of you. Continuing to breathe. Looking into your eyes. And beholding in all your lightness and all your darkness. in all your glory and all your fear, beholding all of you within the face of God. And we begin as we end. We end as we begin, acknowledging the courage to look into those eyes and to love all of you. Taking one last big collective breath together. And returning when you're ready. Namaste.